All right. 3, 2, 1, and we're live here on Caveman's Corner. Ray's not here. He's in Burger King or doing whatever Ray does when he's not here. Heard he broke up with Shard, so hopefully get back together soon. Or if they don't, we got Ray here in the studio more often.
Did you say Shard?
Shard. Shard.
Oh, Shard. Like a shard of glass?
Yeah, I think. I think that's her name. I'm not really 100% sure.
Isn't that like a Blondie song?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I'm not much of music, man.
Heart of glass,
yeah. I'm here with the great UFC veteran, Sean Dougherty. Sean just came to our gym, and he gave a leg lock seminar. Pretty sweet. Showed some Apache stuff. What are you doing in town, man? I can't believe I actually have you in Caveman Corner Studios. Or my mom's basement, you know, whatever it is.
Well, what I'm doing in town is I work for Grappling Industries. I'm their driver. I have the pickup truck and the trailer with all the equipment in it, and I'm like a roadie. I'm a roadie for David Iguchi, and sometimes the performer is Marcos Flores. You know, whoever's running the show, I'm their roadie, and I'm the help meet.
Well, Grappling Industries came in town last year. We went to their tournament, and it wasn't one of the better tournaments in the area. But David was awesome, man. What we did is he came on the thing. There's a Facebook group, and he came on there, man, and everyone that had a question or concern, he addressed every one of them. Mm-hmm. And last year, there wasn't a medic. He promised to have a medic this time. Last time, yeah, Sean's going to be our medic this time, so there's definitely be a medic there. Last time, the arena was cold, and there was nowhere to sit. This time, we got a much better facility. We're going to be at Nardin, Nardin Academy on Saturday. What time's the start?
9 a.m.
9 a.m. The doors open?
Yep.
So get there at 9 o'clock?
Well, weigh-ins, you know, that can start as early as 7:30. So
okay.
The details are in the flyers, like on Facebook and on the webpage. All you have to do is go to grapplingindustries.com.
Awesome. Grapplingindustries.com. And doors open at 9 for regular people. So if you're just coming to watch, make sure you're there at 9. I'll be competing. I'm going to try and not get DQ'd for a change. But we'll see how it goes. There's heel hooks allowed, so I should be okay this time.
Yeah. We allow all kinds of things. It's a good alternative to the IBJJF. You know, and our competitors are more like Naga and the Good Fight, things like that. But it's a friendly competition. It's not like we're trying to kill anybody or get rid of anyone. But what we're also trying to do is always improve. You know, David Iguchi, you know, you have to take his word for it. You know, he's the real deal when he says, don't just tell me the good things that you like about us. You know, I want to know the bad things. Tell me where we messed up. Tell me where we suck, because we want to make it good for you. We want to make it right. You know, so like you were saying last time, there was the it was what, an ice rink?
Yeah, it was an indoor like floor hockey, roller hockey rink. So okay. It was cold in there, and it had the fan going almost the whole event.
Right. And that was, excuse me, you know, trial and error,
right?
You know, as you're coming in, first time Buffalo, let's see, man, this sounds like it might work, let's try it.
I can imagine, yeah. When you're coming from out of town, like, you don't, it's a long drive just to come check out a facility, you know what I mean? And
yeah,
you know, sometimes you don't think, oh, is it going to be heated, you know, like, you right? Think, yeah. Most places in Buffalo be heated, but, and just because they tell you it's going to be heated doesn't mean it actually is heated when you get there. So
yeah, you know, and trial and error. You get your bumps and bruises as you first, when you pioneer stuff going into areas, you know, where you've never been before. You know, you learn from it. It's like, well, shit, that was cold. We ain't doing that again.
Yeah.
So let's try a soccer field this time instead of a hockey, you know? So, and the soccer fields always tend to be a lot better. It's a nice place. It's nicer on the feet. It's nicer on everything. It's just,
my son plays soccer there. It's going to be great. Is it going to be a great facility? I'm excited.
Are there two fields there, or is it just one big one in the middle? Or
there's a field, and then there's like an athletic area on the other side. So okay. It'll probably be, I imagine it'd be on the grass.
Kind of like some kind of CrossFit gym or something in there?
No, it's just like a
Occupy.
Yeah, something like that. I'm really not sure what's on the other side. I've never actually been over on the other side, but it's not another field, so I don't know what's over there. And then, like, I just want to say, like, it was super huge of Dave to come in there and talk to everybody, because I don't think as a gym we were going to go back. And just for him interacting with us and, you know, like telling us what he's going to change, man, it says a lot about a promoter, how much they care about what's going on.
You know what? I spent a lot of time with him, especially these past like 6 months. We've worked a lot of shows together, and I've gone through a lot of stressful situations with him together. Like just working Manhattan alone is, whoa, dude, it's one of our biggest shows, greatest shows. I mean, it's the, you know, the bee's knees of
the cat's ass. You can swear whatever you need to do. Oh
man, it's a motherfucker to set up, though. I mean, it is thankless. It was whatever, you know. But you know, I'm sitting there cussing everything that exists, telling Dave, you know, if there's ever a day of I'm gonna quit, it's today. You know, because it's just so rough. And now, for somebody who's a little bit healthier than I am, you know, I've had 18 surgeries. You know, I'm banged up. You know, and I'm 44 years old. But it's great for a young person. But at the same time, for me, it's like this has been really wearing me down, you know. But it's a great job. But at the same time, Dave cares. Like I'm a disabled veteran, man, and he tries to do everything he possibly can to make my job more comfortable, you know. And he does the same thing for Anthony, our other driver, Anthony Hewitt. But he's always taking his time out to always, like, he always cared. He cares about his employees, but he also cares about his customers too, the competitors. You know, he's been doing this a long time. He's an old school MMA guy, you know, he's a BJJ and MMA, you know, he's been doing this for a long time. He's got a crusty, curmudgeon kind of, you know, spirit about him, but it's what we need. It's a good kind, you know what I mean? He's not caught up with keeping up with the Joneses and status symbols and things like that, man. He's just a real dude.
I like that. Know? That's cool.
You know? And he fucks up. He'll say, oh, shit, I fucked up. And then he'll say, I'm sorry. But not necessarily he'll say he's sorry. He might not even have to, because he's going to say, this is how I'm going to correct it.
And that's exactly what he did, man. You know? That's huge.
Fuck your sorry. Just correct it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's what he does. And it's cool.
And we'll be there this time. We're coming back strong, you know. So that says a lot about the person too. I mean, we all know how it goes. We've all been involved with tournaments our whole life.
Would I involve myself with shitty people?
I don't know. You seem a little shady. No. You hang out with that Emil cat all the time. I don't know. It could be
you
shady.
You know what? That's a funny thing. That is one of the finest mentors you'll ever have on this planet. He's a good dude.
Yeah, I like him really too.
He's solid. I mean, he's a truthful bastard, and he loves he loves truth, and he's a good dude.
What do you guys got going on with John Gunther? I see you guys always like, both of you guys tease each other all the time.
Him and Emil and John, I stay out of it because I love
you
them.
You get in there sometimes, man.
I can when I know it's a right, when the work, it's a work. It's all a work.
Yeah.
You know, it's just fun, and to get people to look at John and to get people to look at, so they're both pointing at each other is what they're doing. They're telling the whole world, hey, look at him. And the other guy's saying, hey, look at him. You know, that's all it is. They get a lot more coverage in the social media realm when there's the banter.
Yeah.
And that's what it's for. That's what works are for. Not saying, fuck you and your mother and your religion and your God. You know, it's like, you know, that's not the right way. You know, make it entertaining, man. Make people laugh. Fuck. Let's quit pissing everybody off.
I love that. Almost every day on Facebook, I look to see them guys trash each other, and it's pretty interesting. I like it.
Yeah, everybody's trashing each other. Remember, we were talking about like in the NHB days?
Yeah.
No holds barred. You know, okay, so yeah, I did the math for the UFC, and I did let UFC know that I am no longer, you know, I am not, it's not an accurate statement that I am the youngest UFC competitor.
That's why I didn't say it in open. You know, I did it for the first time.
Yeah. And it was like...
Can you discuss that a little bit? Because most of my fans probably not going to know what you're talking about right now.
Okay, so...
Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm the young... used to be the youngest competitor ever fight in the UFC. I was 18 years old in 1994 when I fought in UFC 2. Long story short, I was Big John McCarthy's first Let's Get It On. I was the first match he ever refereed. I was the lightest competitor. I was actually weighed in at like 168. They said like 175 or something like that, but that was just to make it not look so bad, because the guy I was fighting was 210 to 220. So, you know, it was a different time, craziness. Where was I going?
I'm not sure where you're going. You lost me, man, a while back.
No, it was. Where did
we were talking about respect because we were talking about shit talking.
Yes. So at that time, you know, there were no rules. NHB, you know, the Big John, he couldn't stop the fight. The referee, corner had to throw in the towel, or you had to tap. So there was a lot of situations like Pat Smith and Scott Morris. You guys remember that?
UFC, I remember that. Too? Yeah. Okay, I thought that was his teeth coming out when you spit that mouthpiece out because I didn't have a clear picture.
All those elbows dropping on Scott. Now, prior to that match, Scott said something. Scott and his camp from Texas, Southern boys.
Oh, snap.
Made an off-colored comment about Pat Smith's ethnic heritage.
Way to skirt around issue, Sean.
So Pat beat the piss out of me.
He did. He got right off him, though. He didn't keep elbowing him.
Gave him some good justice. Yeah, you know, but he gave him some justice.
Officially, that fight should still be going on.
So, in other words, there was some tomfuckery going on, you know, kind of like with Connor's mouth.
Yeah.
You know. But, you know, he dealt with it. He was Pat Smith was Khabib that night. You know, just hammered the shit out of him. You know, but that was how you talk shit, you get hit. You know, talk shit, get shot. You know, I mean, it was bad. You know, so out of respect of the other person which was very selfish. You know, that they don't beat the piss out of you if you got put in a position where you couldn't defend back.
Right, because it'd be up to your corner throwing a towel, not right. Like the ref.
Yeah.
So it was completely different. To defend
intelligently rule was not in place at that time.
There was no intelligently defending.
Yeah. So if you're completely, you know, on Queer Street and somebody's dropping elbows on your cervical spine, headbutting you in the face to pass your guard, you know, or getting to side mount and violently headbutting your skull, you know, and not stopping. You know, there was justice that was done there. So you didn't talk shit.
I guess not. And how much did you make for that UFC appearance?
$1,000 to $1,500.
Yeah, so you're getting paid like what they're getting paid now. So back then you got paid good money.
Yeah, I bought a bag of weed and some mescaline. And tripped my balls and decided I was going to go move in with Ken Shamrock.
How did that go?
It went. It was rough.
Is that when you learn how to arch your back with your leg locks instead of the Apache?
Yes. It was everything. Everything was always a bridge. Victory goes over a bridge.
Can you talk about lines then a little bit? How was that?
What part of it?
I don't know. Just training there with them
guys. What do you think somebody wants to know?
I don't know. Like, how was it? How was Ken? Is he like as crazy as he seems?
Ken is crazy, but crazy in the sense like any one of us are who do this shit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He's no more crazy than anybody else. You know, just sometimes he can get louder or whatever. But this is what he did. He took a 19-year-old kid, actually 18 at the time. I met him at UFC. I was actually his replacement. That's how I got to fight in the UFC because he broke his hand in training with Vernon White. And he watched me train one night at one of the local gyms, and then he approached me and, you know, said he works for Pancrase, you know, he has Lion's Den, he wants me to come and train. Normally there's an initiation.
Yeah, you know, all the squats and all that shit.
Well, no, the initiation originally was just 20 minutes with him.
Oh, damn.
Full go. Pancrase rules.
You just have to not...
It was bad.
You have to live bad. Or you have to like not tap? Because it'd be
No, you can tap a bunch, but you can't quit.
Right.
The process.
Yeah.
Like, you can tap a bunch of times to save your ankles and your own, you know, stuff like that. But if you get choked, you're not letting go of tap. You have to pass out and be revived and continue on.
Right.
It was crazy. You know, but he said, me and Jay, he recruited Jason DeLucia and I, and we didn't have to do the initiation.
Is that because you already fought or you proved to yourself?
Yes, okay. Yeah, we've already proved ourselves by actually going competing. Normally, he was having guys coming in off the street, you know, and he had to test them somehow to make sure that these guys are going to come back, because why waste my time? This is actually, they don't realize that they're going to Japan.
Right.
To go be in front of crowds who will love and adore you, you know, and give you the most respect in the world to be a fighter over there. So he took me and Jason in, and he fed me, housed me, you know, trained me. You know, I don't see a bad guy in there.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah, you know, people have their flaws, and somebody else will tell you a different story about them. But yeah, that's my story.
We had a lot of people on here already that, like, talk, but they're all competitors. No one actually trained with him. So
right.
I want to actually get someone that spent some time with him and maybe get some good information about him out there.
Yeah, no problem.
What about him and his brother? Was there a lot of, like, bad blood going on there? I mean...
Well, when I was there, this is what I know, okay? This is where I was, you know, like, when I was there. You know, now it's okay to talk about this. Back in the day, we kind of kayfabed, you know, the fact that Frank was in prison for a time.
Right.
For some bad decisions he made as a teenager.
Well, we all make some bad decisions. No problems there.
I mean, but we picked him up in... from Folsom. Like, I flew out, Jason DeLucia flew out, and then me and Jason DeLucia and Bob Shamrock flew, Bob went down to Folsom, picked up Frank and brought him back. Jason and I are kind of waiting for him at the house. You know, we're asking questions, what's going on? Who is this guy? You know? So the plan was, and this was a fucking perfect plan. I mean, Bob Shamrock was a goddamn genius when it came to how to help human beings become better people. I love that dude. Bob Shamrock was one of my first real mentors in life, like, aside from family members, right? So the plan was to Bob adopts Frank so that he's not Frank Juarez from Folsom Prison, but he's Frank Shamrock,
right?
Ken's brother.
Gives him a name and start to fight
game. Right. Neither one of these dudes are Irish. Like, Frank's actual, or Ken's actual blood is, I think, Italian.
He looks Italian.
Yeah. You know, and Frank is Mexican-American, I believe, is the actual proper thing for Frank. I forget which tribe he's from. But yeah, that was the plan. It was like a reinvention of the person. So he was introduced in Japan as Ken's brother. And, you know... He was built just like Ken, you know, mannerisms. Frank even tried to walk like Ken, like, not out of, like, brainwashing, but, like, just to poke fun at him. Everybody learned how to walk like Ken. So, it's so duck-footed kind of thing.
It's definitely his own thing.
Yeah. But, you know, it was cool, man. You know, and we've had a couple heart-to-hearts. Like, when I lived out there, he took me out to eat, you know, bought me a couple beers, you know, at the local rodeo. You know, he's wearing his duster. Sleeveless shirt and duster and a fanny pack, you know. 1994.
God damn.
Lodi, California. You know, we're all wearing spandex all the time and Speedos. We're fighting in Speedos wearing spandex, you know. It's just... That was a fucking weird situation.
It's like John Gunther's basement.
I've never been in there. But it's, you know, I mean, it's probably alpaca something.
Oh, shit. It's so out there. Did you ever, like, was there really bad blood between them? Or is that all overblown in the media? Or?
No, from my understanding that it was. So my understanding, you know, of things was when... Ken went to the WWF again, right? He's no longer around. You know, even when I was there, the dude was fighting every month. Pancrase had him out there every month.
Right. He had 2 weeks wars out there.
He was hardly ever even home. So a lot of my training came from Jason DeLucia.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Jason kind of became the dude that was really important because he had Aikido and Judo. Like he was also in the Gracie Challenge, early Gracie Challenge videos. That's how he got in the first UFC.
I saw that actually.
Because he wanted a rematch with Hoist, and Horian was like, look, if you want a rematch, we're about to do this show. Come be an alternate, and there's a chance you'll be able to get into it. You win as an alternate, you'll be in the next one, you'll have a chance at Hoist. All right. So technically, Jason DeLucia has the first, I think, the first rear naked choke in or even the first submission in the UFC. In UFC 1 alternate match.
Right.
Like the preliminary, like before the fight started, he fought to in case they needed an extra.
Yeah. That's cool. I used to do those a lot. Mm-hmm. I don't think I've ever seen that fight, and I consider myself UFC.
Oh, you should see it, dude. It's a cool fight. Another good fight is to watch Jason DeLucia and Scott Baker.
Yeah, that's another good one.
Judo. Jason has him in a Sankaku.
Yeah.
Jimmy has him in a triangle choke, you know, mounted top. And he's just kind of tapping him, hitting him, letting him know. He's like, hey, you know, you're not getting out of this.
Right.
You know, and you know, you just tap any time, man. I'm not going to hurt you that bad.
Different times.
Yeah,
you
know, he's just being cool about it. You know, Baker said afterwards, he was like, it was the most gentleman-like beating I ever took in my life. You know,
such a different time. Like, yeah. Just so much respect for the fighters back then.
Yeah, man. And these were true martial artists. A lot of these guys were, you know, actually learn some kind of traditional martial art. That's one of the things that we're missing, is some kind of philosophy, you know, like a heavy philosophy within the martial arts. MMA, it's almost gone.
Right.
You know, it is literally just the dagger and the fucking sword. There's no poetry in between.
Once money gets involved, dude, like morality goes right out the window.
That's the difference between a martialist and a martial artist. You know, a martialist is the dude that just gets paid to get it done.
Right.
They're not there to learn.
Assassins.
You know, it's just about what can make me do this faster, better. Mm-hmm. It's just a function. Martial artist can learn it all.
Yeah, like our role today, man. That was a pretty sick role. I liked it.
It was fun, wasn't it?
Super disciplined. We didn't move hard. Just all tiger.
We literally went by grips and position.
Yep.
You know, and that felt great. That was like the longest role that I've had in a long time. That was like 20 minutes straight. Right?
Yeah, for sure. We did four five-minute rounds. Yeah.
Yep.
20 minutes.
So
we did have 1 minute break in between every round.
Right. But still. Yeah, that was good for me, you know? Then on, I can barely move anymore, you know? I get on the mat, I feel good.
Dude, you're a Yoda. I don't mean to take your saying. You already told me this. We talk about this off air, but if you see Sean on the mat, man, he is like a young kid. And you're 44?
Yeah.
We talked a lot about the injuries you suffered. Do you want to give a little breakdown for the fan? You don't have to if you don't want to. It's all HIPAA stuff, obviously.
No, that's fine. No, I've had like 18 surgeries now. Everything from tonsillectomy to appendectomy. You know, my neck is fused. I've had 4 spinal operations altogether. My neck is fused. My lower back is fused. 2 knee operations. They told me last time, in a few years, I got to get it replaced. My left wrist has been operated on, and that has to be either fused or replaced. It's almost like it looks like I have cerebral palsy a bit, like in my hand. I forget what they call it. Some kind of a palsy that I have now from the nerve damage from everywhere in there. What else? My abdomen is Kevlar mesh.
How did that happen?
3 shoulder surgeries each. A bilateral inguinal hernia.
Oh,
they said it looked like a grenade went off.
Damn.
Down there. It was just nothing was being held in anymore. So I was born with a hernia, I guess, and it just got worse as I was training. But my training, like, it all kept my core strong. And the reason why I found out I had a hernia is because I was in NCO Academy in the Air Force. It was like the class you go through before you get to become a sergeant. And I couldn't work out for a few weeks, and I got soft, and I started golfing, and that twisting motion, like
golf fucked you out of everything you do, dude.
How crazy is that? So the next thing I know, like, I feel like I had a midget in my underwear kicking me in the balls all the time. And it was just like, it was, my nuts were in so much pain. So I went to the doctor, and it's like, yep, you got a hernia. You got a double hernia here. You know, they went inside, and afterwards they said they had to use so much Kevlar mesh and everything just to patch it all back up. It was crazy.
Damn. A lot of people aren't going to know this, but you're a veteran. Can you talk about the Air Force a little bit?
Yeah. I started, when did I join the Air Force? I was supposed to swear in on September 11th.
The September 11th?
Yeah, 2001.
The September 11th.
Yeah, I woke up to the planes crashing in the building.
God damn.
I called my recruiter and was like, are we going today? Are we still get to go? And he's like, nah, we're on Delta. We're not doing anything. you know, probably tomorrow. Stand by, I'll, you know, let you know. So went down September 12th, enlisted in the Air Force. I had already been trying to get in. That was just like back in May of that year. I was May 2001. I had already started the process, but I already had two shoulder surgeries to begin with. So I had to get I tried going Marine Corps first, and they're like, nope, the BMed wouldn't even allow me in because of the surgeries. And I could have lied too, because you couldn't even see the incisions or nothing. Nobody would ever known. But I told the truth, and they were like, all right, don't go Army. Go Air Force. And they got a lot of options. If you want to do hardcore shit, you can go do hardcore shit. If you want to do desk job stuff, you can do desk job stuff. I mean, if whatever you want to do, you can do in the Air Force. It's like a corporation. You know? It's like, he's right, too. It really is. It's ran like a corporation more than it is like, you know, like a military kind of structure. It's funny. But it's more useful when you get out of the military.
For sure.
It really does work. It's pretty cool.
Reading a great book, Extreme Ownership, by Jocko Willinks. Willinks has a great book. You probably like that a lot.
Yeah, he hangs out at the Origins place, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, out there in Maine. I went to their retreat on an off time. I didn't like go to the thing. I didn't pay for anything. I was just visiting a friend, Matt Hoffman. James Hoffman. Matt Hoffman, sorry. James Hoffman of Trap and Roll Soap Company. I went and hung out with him. Awesome dude. I'm glad I did it.
Is that the soap you had today?
No, that's actually Kevin DeVry's soap, Rank Soap Company.
Rank Soap Company? That's some good soap.
That was Brown Belt.
Yeah, I borrowed Sean's soap today. It was some good soap. So free plug for whoever soap that was.
Yeah,
that was great stuff.
Yeah, I went through the white belt, blue belt. My daughter took the purple belt. I won't smell. Sorry, Kevin, I will not allow lavender go through my nostrils. It creates estrogen. So... bad. No. Then I already used the black belt, and now I'm on brown belt.
Going back, that's a little weird.
That's my poopy bar. I'm going to call it Mr. Hanky.
It's funny because left a little, like it looked like poop stain on the shower. I'm like, oh, shit. Damn.
I don't want to get this stuff. But yeah, the brown. So that should be Mr. Hanky.
Yeah.
And then like back to, like with Trap and Roll, that's that right there, man. When you have a masked wrestler, you have a luchador as your mascot, you already won me with that. That's just amazing shit. But the dude's amazing. I spent a lot of time with him. He's cool motherfucker, man. James Hoffman. Good dude. Okay, so where are we at? Okay.
Air Force.
Yeah. Dude, you look inside my mind. It's like everything and everywhere all the time at once, every direction you can think of simultaneously.
I love the ADD. If you are listening to this, I know you're a busy dude. You probably never listen to this, but you sound pretty cool, man. Like you're all over the place, but it makes sense. Like I get it at least, but I get hit a lot too. So hopefully everyone here listening gets it too.
Well, yeah, they've been hit a lot too, hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully.
They're choked at least, you know. Yeah. You know, lose brain cells, losing brain cells is great.
We mostly do MMA, so, you know, we do a little bit of jiu-jitsu too, but mostly MMA stuff, so. Yeah, most people listening probably got hit a little bit.
Bumps and bruises.
Some orthopedic surgery too.
But I went in through the Pararescue Combat Control Selection Course 3 times, you know, and each time I was in between times of going, I was always training. So I was always training, getting ready for pararescue. And every single time I went, I fucking got injured bad. You know, the first time I got injured, I didn't realize how bad it was until the second time. I got injured when they went in with the MRIs and x-rays and saw that I tore my shoulder off. It's not the labrum off the bone from 12 o'clock to 9 o'clock. So 75% of it was torn off the fucking bone.
And you didn't realize that?
Well, I rehabbed it so good, built the muscle up around it, that they were amazed. It was like, shit, you know, I was like, I was on to something. I learned, when you get injured as much as I do, and you have an indomitable spirit, and you're going to still do shit, you learn how to circumvent. You go around the fucking problem. You either through, around, or over. There's no other way. You fucking figure out a way, dude, because I'm not going backwards. I'm not changing my mind. I'm still gonna do what I want to do, you know. So when I had to fucking be able to fight for, you know, double wrist lock, Kimura, or whatever, and my shoulders didn't fucking work, and I had to hold my arms together like a Tyrannosaurus Rex, you know? You know, I had to learn how to use my legs to accommodate the submission, so I've learned how to use everything, my whole entire body, other than my arms.
Is that kind of where the Apache system came from? Yes,
yeah, yeah. Being able to lock down, pin down the hips for a few seconds to be able to give yourself more time before an escape. You know, you just gives you a few more minutes, or not minutes, seconds to lock in your submission.
Well, it depends how you're doing. If Sean's doing it to you, you might have minutes because you're probably tap. Your hold downs are brutal, man.
Thanks, man.
Is that from, you think, catch wrestling, or you think?
No, that's mine.
Yeah?
That's mine. You know, it's just simply, I mean, it's not mine like I invented it, but nobody taught me it.
Right.
Like, that. I mean, I figured out it's somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
everything we do is,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and if it's not on this planet, it's on some other planet, and the universal ether that locks us all together, I'm tapped into it or whatever at some certain time, and I get this fucking idea and it fucking works. And you know,
a couple months ago I thought I made a choke, and then I saw online, I was pretty disappointed. I'd never seen it before. I was like, oh, this will work awesome, dude. And I was like, this is great. I was hitting on everybody. And then, like, it's online everywhere, dude. Like,
yeah.
I was like, God.
Don't be goddamn it. Yeah. He's like, no, pay attention now. Like, no, I was on the right track. That lets you know your brain works.
Right.
I've had that done 1,000 times to me, dude, where I'm thinking about something, I figure something out. And, you know, like me and Emil, you know, like he's always around when I'm mm-hmm. thinking of something or doing something. And then either I'm sending him a clip of something that I just did, yeah, or he's sending me a clip of something I just did. Does it look familiar? Yeah. You know? Now, it doesn't bother me. It doesn't like, I should have done it. Oh, fuck that. That's the ego.
Right.
You know, but what it does tell me is that, no, my brain is working. You know, I am tapped into something. My brain is figuring shit out, and it's legitimate.
I was just thinking, man, if I would have saw this, I wouldn't have wasted all the time thinking about how to invent it. I could have just did it.
Yeah.
Because it works good.
But if you never knew and it's still coming, you know, that's right. What an autodidact does. That's somebody who's self-taught does. You know, you don't wait to be told. You don't wait to be given the answer. You fucking figure it out, man. We're like little Indiana Jones. Archaeologists were fucking finding shit, man.
That's awesome. I like that. You know, I never thought of it like that, to be honest with you.
No, it goes back to like my injuries, man. Like the only reason why I healed up after my injuries so well was because I researched my injuries. I researched everything that goes on with my injuries, the surgeries that go with it, the recovery that goes with it. And I knew ahead of time of what was going to happen. I knew what I needed to do ahead of time, and I got my mind right for it, and I got my, you know. And when I get my mind right, then my body falls into place.
Right. So you're the WebMD guy.
I guess. What's that?
WebMD. The WebMD where you like look up your shit and you're like,
I'm like,
oh,
the
man.
WebLSD guy.
That's better. That probably figures it out quicker.
Yeah. You know, so I just, you know.
Google's an amazing thing. We were just talking about that earlier because we didn't know which side we're supposed to tie the red part of our black belts on. We're two black belts. We don't know how to tie our belts. So apparently, we looked on Google, and Google said that the red rank bar should be on the left-hand side, like where a samurai would draw a sword from. So if I'm wrong on this, and you're sitting there laughing at me like I'm a retard or an asshole or something, please leave a comment so I know how I'm supposed to tie my belt. And then I'll pass it along to Sean. But he's going to ignore it anyways, because he doesn't even look when he ties his belt.
I don't give a shit. But you know what? Let me know it's on the left, because I'm going to make sure it's on the right.
But we looked at the pictures, and they're both ways.
Right? Oh, wow.
We got these paintings at the gym, and the pictures are both ways. But what they say is when you take a picture, it's reflected. That's why it's backwards.
True to that.
Yeah, so that's why some of them are backwards.
Yeah, but you're able to tell if it's on the right side, because you're looking at it. Yeah, no. I don't know. These new pictures.
Yeah.
Like when you take a picture, is it a selfie picture or whatever? Whatever, you're just looking at, everything's opposite.
Right.
It's completely opposite. It's like a photo negative.
I don't think I'm stoned enough to talk with you. Oh, man. Falling off the rails. You have a great story about Alex Stiebling. It's heartbreaking to hear it, but if you wouldn't mind talking about it on recording, that'd be great.
Yeah, that ties into me joining the fucking military.
Yeah, that was That's kind of why I brought up the Air Force thing. I thought you'd go into it, but I'll dig a little bit deeper.
I tend to forget about shit like
put that needle back into you.
Lost opportunities because I've had to brainwash myself into thinking that everything.
Well, I got a good brainwashing question right when you're done.
that it was supposed to be that way or whatever. But anyways, so back in the day, you know, I used to train with Jason Gotze at the F, you know, with the F Academy in Indiana, which one of my training partners was Chris Lytle. We came up together. We had Alex Stiebling join in a little bit later, and you know, with the Gary Myers was an OG, you know, just, you know, that whole Indiana crew, which I had to travel 4 hours just to go train with those guys. You know, we were talking back in the day, you didn't really have anybody to train with.
People don't understand how great it was to have like 4 or 5 black belts on a mat just today.
Yeah, that was 97, 98 for me. So we got to go to, so that's 98. I do that. I'm out there training. 99, I get my first set of shoulder surgeries. 2000, I fight in the Arnold Classic's first grappling tournament, jiu-jitsu tournament. I take second place. I go to Pancrase that April after that, like right after that show. Like a month later, I fought in Pancrase. Minoru Suzuki, he tore my shoulder out. I was fighting my idol. That was crazy. And then I don't have a match for a while. You know, that was 2000. April 2000 was my last time I fought. So Phyllis Lee was my manager. I wasn't getting any fights. Any paying fights sanctioned. You know, I did some smokers and shit like that.
And we talk about that too. Like, it's a different time, man. Like,
yeah.
Me and Sean have these fights that no one will ever know about. Nothing's recorded. It's just how it was back in the day.
It sounds like, oh, convenient.
Yeah.
You know, for a fight. No, it's just how it was. You know, and I always, you know, like, you can even ask my wife about this. I always say, you know, why don't you take pictures? This is barely anything right now. I will in the future. You know, I'll start recording things, taking things in the, you know, the future, because it doesn't matter now, you know.
Dude, you've been all around my house. I don't have, like, nothing up, man. Like, I've been in fights all over the place and train all over the place. You wouldn't even know I do jiu-jitsu, man.
Yeah, it's like, you know, that's what social media is now. That's your new wardrobe of,
you know. You almost have to advertise now, though, if you're trying to make any kind of money. You just got to do it. Anyways, back to...
So, the fight, I have my fight, you know, and I try college for a little while, and I'm realizing I can't make ends meet. I got a kid on the way, we already had the kid. You know, I have a mortgage payment, feeding a kid, taking care of my wife, too, and then I was just like, fuck, I'm not getting any fights. So I joined the military, or not join the military, I start enlisting in the military, I start the process for enlisting. And I started, you know, I tried for the Marine Corps. They wouldn't take me because I had 2 shoulder surgeries. They told me to go to the Air Force. I went through the Surgeon General, and they gave me a waiver after an orthopedic consultation, where they said that I can join. And I signed up for pararescue, combat control, and taught myself how to swim. Learned how to,
you should have taught Rashad Evans how to swim.
Got everything. Oh, fuck. Got all my shit tight, you know, learned water confidence, learned how to do underwaters and things like that. So joined, got injured. Or wait, sorry, we're going back to Alex Stiebling. We're doing the Alex Stiebling
part. Yeah, the Alex Stiebling part.
So so I start the process, right? So they tell me to go Air Force, so I'm like, okay. So May 2001, I start the process of joining the military. You can edit this shit out, right? Like, all my garble, you know?
Yeah.
So 2000...
I'm going to leave the garbles in, but I edit out the part where you just go rambling off.
2000... They have it fade away. Like, oh, okay, we're back.
I could probably do that.
Oh, shit. So I'm so tired. I drove 4 hours to get here, and I'm just tired as fuck.
And I gave him some drinks.
So where are we at? I'm joining the goddamn military because I'm too fucking poor to fucking take care of my family and go to school and shit. So I do the delayed entry program. I'm trying to get in. I get approved. I go to swear in September 11th. Boom. Doesn't happen because of the planes. And then I got to do it September 12th. Now I'm still waiting for a job placement thing because I'm trying to go combat control at this point. You know, and they're waiting for slots. And Phyllis Lee, my manager, calls me. Phyllis Lee calls me and says, hey, I got a fight for you in Venezuela in October. The winner of the whole thing gets blah, blah, blah amount of money and a contract to Pride. I'm like, okay, hold on. Let me call my recruiter and see if he thinks I'm going to be going in at that time. You know, and he gives me the spiel. You don't want to because he doesn't want to lose me. Like I'm telling him, like, look, I got this fucking once-in-a-lifetime fight deal. This is what I've been waiting for, blah, blah, blah. He's seeing, oh, if this guy wins, does good, he ain't joining the Air Force. I just lost my quota.
Were you at a point where you could pull out of the Air
Force? Oh, yes. Thing? Yes. All the way up until the point I was getting ready to go. Like, it was just, like, when I swore on September 12th, that was the delayed entry program. Right. I swore in again a second time, like, January 2002.
Damn, you're a good dude, man. I don't know if I would have. I think I would have went for the Pride shit. But keep going about the Stiebling story, because a lot of my fans really like Stiebling. Yeah, well, my friends at least.
I love, like, no, the dude's a really good dude. So we were training partners, and he was younger than me. He was just getting started. He had a good wrestling base, you know, things like that. Generally a good MMA guy, but I was just more seasoned, you know, and I was able to tap him at the time, you know, and I was the, you know, helping everybody on team with leg locks at that time. I was just always kind of good at leg locks. And so I got asked to help people out. So, and my leg locks were really good for MMA, not just jiu-jitsu, but MMA, dealing with punches and stuff like that. Like, if you notice today, you know how it's hard to punch me. You can't get to my face.
No, that Apache
leg. I didn't show you, but even when we're inverted, when I'm inverted and you're standing above me, I'm in that Apache leg pin, you can't punch me. I have ultimate fucking controller.
Feels like if you bend over at all, you're going to be able to take me right over.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. It's really cool. But that's one of the things I developed, like, throughout my MMA career, was that concept of leg locks. But it's an MMA-style leg locks that I'm introducing into BJJ.
I like the entry underneath the leg, too, where you, like, attach yourself to them. That's sweet.
I'm using a modified Melanson necktie. Yeah. A Neil Melanson necktie on that. So I was able to tap Alex and stuff like that, but he ended up taking my spot and doing the Venezuela thing, and he won the whole goddamn thing. Mm-hmm. Won the whole thing. And he got known as the Brazilian killer.
Yeah. You know, and then he's a very good fry, too.
Yeah, man. Dude, he's awesome. He's a great dude. No, this is not like a diss kind of thing. It's just a funny.
Just a missed opportunity story, man. Like,
yeah, dude. Like, you know, I talk like, you know, like, fuck.
We were just talking with my son about, like, the chances of making it as a fighter, too. You just have to be in the right place. It doesn't even matter how fucking good you are most of the time. Yeah. It's just about knowing the right person or being in the right spot.
You know, and I've been around, and I've had all the things line up except for the body. Mm-hmm. My body's been my greatest crux. Like, it's always stopped me from self-actualizing in the martial arts as a professional fighter, like becoming a champion or anything like that. It never held up. It just never held up. It didn't hold up in the military either, you know?
It's so crazy because your will is so strong.
But, yeah, you know, and that's just the only thing that kind of keeps me alive. You know, like what keeps me alive is thinking about my kids, you know what I mean? Like, if something happened to me, they don't have all the benefits from the military retirement that I have, you know, things like that. I'm leaving them on their own. You know, that's just kind of a shitty thing to do to somebody. You know, that's called a buddy fucker. You don't fuck your buddies, you know.
Right.
And
or the girls, Felton.
Yeah, you don't fuck people over. So
that's an inside joke. Felton is not fucking anyone's girl. We were just teasing him earlier at the gym, so I just want to make that very clear since I just threw him under the bus on the podcast. Felton is not banging anyone's girlfriend or doing anything inappropriate. It was just some gym humor. and I'm not going to edit it out, so I want to make sure that I cover my ass.
It went over my head. I'm innocent. I have no idea what's going on.
Sean was like giving it to Sam, throw him under the bus. He's giving me the... If it was video, you guys would know. Yeah.
Shit. But yeah, that was the Alex Stiebling little tidbit of me. Can I see? That's what I am. I'm like a gimmick. I'm more of like a
I don't think gimmick's the right word.
A relic or a, you know, like an antique.
Antique might be the right word to you're moving around
like,
today.
Kind of like just the thing you just kind of like you talk about.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, trivia.
You are trivia, man.
Who is that one guy?
You're John McCarthy's first match.
Yeah.
That's actually a trivia question that people ask.
Who was his first match? Yeah. Did he ever referee?
Yeah. Uh-huh. That's on Sure Dog all the time.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, there was such a long time where, you know, without the internet, like, if we had social media, like, when I was doing this, it would have been, hands down, it would have been a different story.
Yeah.
But back then, it was very Illuminati type thing. It was only the gatekeepers that let you in.
If you think about it, this is the first sport that grew with the internet. If you think about it, martial arts, the explosion of UFC was very coincided with the explosion of the internet. And mm-hmm.
Yeah, 2002 when I went to Dover Delhi, my first base was when the first Ultimate Fighter came out.
Yeah. Damn.
But did you ever notice it was around that time when all the shit talking started in the UFC?
It's because the money came in then, man. Money, TV, and social media.
It all started there.
Yeah,
started there. Every single coach on the Ultimate Fighter has been a shit talker.
Mm-hmm.
Whether they were beforehand that or not, they were a shit talker. I have a friend who was offered a position on the Ultimate Fighter, and they encouraged him to drink heavily and encouraged him to say things. He's just like, you know, my mom didn't raise me to be an idiot. Sorry, I can't do this. In his own good consciousness, he couldn't do it. He's right. Just like, I'm not going to do this shit. This is just silly. Total silliness.
It's reality TV, man. That's what they got to set that shit up.
Yeah, you know, but everybody buys it, you know. It's bullshit.
I watch it because I like to see how they actually train. That's kind of cool.
No, that's fine. Yeah. I mean, like, everybody has their reasons, and you can watch anything and find a virtuous
reason. I wish they had more training video, dude. That's what people really want to see anyway. Yeah, most of the people that watch that shit.
It's like MTV leaving the music videos behind and going into all the bullshit. Yeah. You know, you barely ever see a video.
We are fucking old. People don't even know MTV used to play videos.
Shit. And I've been on Netflix for so long that I forgot that MTV doesn't even show music videos anymore. I don't watch anything on cable anymore.
Netflix is a shit, dude.
Dude, you get to have ultimate control. You choose what kind of shit goes in your head.
Yeah, there's some great fighting documentaries on there too, man.
Dude, they're great shit. Yeah. Dude, I love Netflix. Dude, I feel smarter after watching Netflix.
I don't actually pay for Netflix, but Netflix is dude. Shit.
That's awesome.
Our piano teacher downstairs were on her account, so it was pretty sweet.
Yeah, because you can have like
four people. Yeah. It's pretty sweet.
That's pretty cool. I like that hippie vibe. I like their alternate.
It's going to replace TV, dude. People are not going to have cable in 5 years. Everything's going to be you pick and choose what you watch.
That's a good thing, too. Cable's bullshit.
Yeah. They suck here in New York. You do have some Buffalo ties, man. You want to talk about that a little bit? I know you might not want to get into
Kevin,
some of that.
Kevin Rozier.
Yeah, Kevin Rozier. In a month you lived here in your car, pretty much.
Yeah, that sucks.
And then the blizzard.
Oh, God. Yeah, dude. That was what... So, me and my buddies were watching the first UFC. I told them that we were going to... The guys that I was with, I was like, I'm going to be in the next one. Watch. I just had this fucking feeling. I just like knew it. And the week later, I went to Bill and Kelly Gallant's. They're a local karate folk around here in the Buffalo area. They were running a karate tournament, and I promised that I would help out with refereeing and stuff like that and judging. So I was up there working the tournament, and they were good friends with, like, Kevin Rozier, who was in the first one. They were in the first UFC. What was your strategy? Let him hit me. So, it's...
Dude, hit the stomps that he hit that guy with, though, were pretty sweet.
Zane Frazier? Was that that guy's name?
Zane Frazier's the guy that beat him, right?
Mm-mm.
Or who beat him?
Remco Pardue beat him, didn't he?
No.
Not Remco. No, I'm sorry. Gerard Yordeaux.
Gerard Gordeau. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Gerard beat him.
No, Gerard Gordeau was one.
No, Gerard Gordeau was the one who stomped him, stomped the shit out of him.
No, Kevin Rozier stomped somebody, too.
No, but he, Kevin, yeah, Gerard Gordeau's.
Yeah, he heel stomped him in the rib. Yeah.
Sorry, Gerard's a really cool dude. I liked him. But
yeah, he's a bad motherfucker, man.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, yeah. He actually, it was, I had my choice to either move in with him or Ken Shamrock.
Yeah.
He also offered me to come live with him in Holland in The Hague.
How did you not take that, dude? Holland's a crazy place. Well,
I was 18. Yeah. I was talking to Charlie, and I was like, what should I do? This is where I talked to Charlie Anzalone about this. I was like, you know, who should I go with, Ken or that? And he goes, well, you know, you're safer here in America. You know, Jar is pretty crazy. You know, the rave scene, you know, the you know, just the crazy shit that he was into at the time. He goes, you know, let's keep you young for a little while longer. You know,
probably a good choice in retrospect.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But, you know, I like that I went the grappling route. I needed it. I knew I needed it. I was the kind of martial artist that I wanted to learn absolutely everything. You know, the first school I was ever at, in Cuyahoga Falls, you know, it was called the Martial Arts Center. You know, there was Aikido, Judo, Ninjutsu, Taekwondo, and kickboxing. It was all there. And, you know, and I was taught to learn absolutely everything and anything. You know, so it wasn't hard for me to wrap my mind around, okay, I need to learn this other form of grappling. Because, like, when I lost, I wasn't like cognitive dissonance, like nope, next time I'll get him, I'll just sidestep better, you know, I'll drive that knee instead of throwing the roundhouse, you know, I should have just done this, and nope, I wouldn't change a thing, you know, for next, no, I was just like, fuck, I need to learn this shit, you know. So that was another deciding factor between Ken and Gerard, right. You know, do I go on to be more of a kickboxer, or do I do this? This is what it was like, this is the future.
Grappling was a wave of the future then too, man.
You know, and he was part of, he was, you know, one of the main Pancrase guys and everything. And, you know, Jason and I both were like, looked at each other, hey, can I offer me this? Yeah, you offered me it too. What do you think? I don't know. We sat in that dinner, we talked about it. I was like, okay, I'll see you in a month.
Cool. That's cool, man. That's how we used to do things too. Like, I wasn't like, I'll sign this contract and come go train here.
Yeah, No.
So stupid, no.
Yeah, no, the contracts came, like, you know, when it was coming time to fight, you know.
Yeah, and stuff, well, like, I mean, that's different, but I mean.
But no, it wasn't like a life contract. No.
Now you got your managers, they got contracts with your gym and like all kinds of just bullshit.
Dude, I don't even know how that works. I wouldn't even know how to navigate that shit.
It's tough sometimes.
All I knew was like the golden rule that was taught to me, that was told to me, was like, never accept a fight from somebody who can't pay your way to the event and give you food and shelter.
That's pretty good rules to live by, especially back then. Pretty simple.
If you can, if they can do all those things, you know what I mean, then it's a good organization to fight for.
Right. King Cage takes care of me pretty good. I like it.
Good.
Yeah, feeds you a nice, huge hotel room. Nicest hotel rooms I ever stay in, man. It's great.
That's awesome.
I know. I feel like a rock star for like 2 days.
We got to get you out to Vegas on Tough Enough
with
Jeff Myers. I think they just started doing pro bouts.
Perfect. I'm old, man. I got to get in it quick. I would love to go fight in Vegas once.
Yeah, it's a nice place. Jeff Myers, that is one of the folks, that is one of the coolest dudes you'll ever meet. You know, he runs one of the best organizations in the country. It was amateur for a very long time, but recently, I believe, it just went pro. So if you can ever get out to see a Tough Enough event, MMA event out in Las Vegas, you'd be doing yourself a favor.
Hell yeah. I'm going to come out to Vegas to see some fights someday. I'll go see Tough Enough.
Ronda Rousey got her start there.
Yeah. Really?
That was her amateur. That was her amateur circuit that she came up through.
That's amazing.
Yeah, there's a couple of UFC people who have
come. She came out of Vegas, huh?
Because of Gokor, you know, and Jean LaBelle.
I thought she came through California for some reason. I don't know if she came through Vegas.
Probably both. I mean, those two are so compatible. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Cool.
So.
Yeah. How was, I got a question back in the day. So, Alex Stiebling came in, he wrecked the Brazilian guys. Were you guys scared of the Brazilian? Not scared, but did you have like deep respect for him? Or
nope.
Did you guys think you were like way better?
Exact opposite of respect. It was just like, grappling is grappling. Doesn't matter if it's it wasn't even called Brazilian. It was just Gracie Jiu-Jitsu then.
Right.
I mean, this is how long ago it was. It wasn't really called BJJ yet. It was just Gracie Jiu-Jitsu. And then you started seeing other fighters coming in, you know, throwing weird anomalies in there, like Marco Huas. Well, this guy's Brazilian, but he's not a Gracie. What is this? How does this work? Well, he does jiu-jitsu, but it's not Gracie jiu-jitsu. Well, let's just, he's from Brazil and he does jiu-jitsu. Let's call it Brazilian jiu-jitsu. You know, right. I saw it like that. You know what I mean? I was trying to keep track of it. I'm like, what the fuck? You know, and I was, you know, a judo black belt, you know, catch wrestler, you know, so I could do basically everything I was doing was BJJ anyways. And every time I would train with BJJ guys, when you train with somebody, you're learning from them.
Right.
You know, you pass it on. I was doing it for so damn long. You know, and the BJJ I know, or it's just jiu-jitsu, goddamn.
Right.
You know, that I know deals with striking and headbutts and knees and everything, you know, being downed and kicked and stomped, you know, dealing with all those things. So my jiu-jitsu, I don't give a fuck when you pass my guard.
I can tell.
You know, I don't give a fuck.
I just want to say,
let's see what you do.
When we rolled today, it was like two experienced MMA fighters rolling, dude. It wasn't like a jiu-jitsu roll. Did you notice that? Yeah. We're both like covering arms and like through the roll. It's just like we're both in tune with each other too. It was pretty sweet.
Yeah.
Not to like sound gay and shit now that
we're talking, but it was cosmic.
It was cosmic rolling.
Yeah, it was good shit.
With your unicorn underwears.
And my space kitten with her laser beams.
Oh, man.
So, yeah, I don't even know what the fuck I was saying now.
We're talking about rolling MMA, like when we rolled today, and then
your jiu-jitsu for
fighting.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so it's dealing with, you know, over under, pulling the head off the side, keeping you remember the old drill?
Yeah.
Over here. You know, dude.
Can he hit you? Make sure your head's protected. Yeah.
Yeah. You know,
I do that with the kids' class all the time.
My guard is based off of being able to be punched. Mm-hmm. I have my open guard, the style of open guard that I use keeps a knee shield constantly, or even a foot though. So where I can control when you can come near me, so I can time my punch.
Yeah, and push you back away.
And I can keep you away, you know, at my will. I can bring you in and push you away at my will, and I can time my punch.
That's the old school Hickson style jiu-jitsu.
Yes,
man.
Okay, Jason Gotze was a Hickson student, and I learned from Jason Gotze. He was my main hardcore first real deal, like the MMA thing. Now, John Saylor was an all-around, you know, kind of guy. He wasn't my striking technician, but he was my judo and Nawaza grappling coach and catch wrestling coach, along with Ken, you know, things like that. So, but with the actual technical stuff of MMA, I really got the most out of Jason Gotze.
That's awesome. Did you ever train Hickson yet?
No, I would love to meet him. Like, I was just thinking about it the other day. I was like, I wonder if I somehow can get in touch with him, because I actually agree with a lot of stuff that he says.
Yeah.
He's the one Gracie that I really, really, really liked. That I never met him, but I liked him.
I went to a seminar with him, dude. He's amazing. He took time to talk with me.
Yeah.
Came around every technique. He made sure he came over and, like, tested it. I mean, I was a brown belt at the time. He kind of respects the upper belts a little bit more. But, dude, I'm a nobody. I'm just a brown belt. There's, like, 400 people in the room, you know? But, dude, he was the, like, coolest seminar I've ever been on.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, I would like to actually.
Instructor.
I don't want to just meet him. It's like, let me sign my cock. You know, it's not something like that. It's just, hey, yo, man.
Yeah, he's on the mat every time, too.
I'd like to say, you know, hey, you know, I agree with what you're saying, man. I think there needs to be some kind of a shift.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we either need to make the tournaments more reality-like, like we used to. You know,
what do you think about that combat jiu-jitsu?
It's fucking great.
Yeah,
Eddie Bravo he's repurposing an idea, and it's like the right time. It's whether or not it's the right time for it to catch on. Like when I saw people fucking mocking it, I was like, "Bitch, you have no fucking clue what it feels like." Come here. You know, I trained for Pancrase for many years. I know how to fucking knock a motherfucker out with an open hand easier than I can with a punch. I choose, like, even if I had gloves on, I would use open palm instead of my, you know, the punching, the
that's
glove
a
and the knuckle.
Fearsome strike, man.
Dude, it doesn't bend. There's no give. It's like a 2x4, the end of a 2x4 coming right at your fucking whatever it is that hits. It hurts, man, when you do it right. It's not like, eh. You know, you're not slapping somebody with your fingers, dude. You're hitting them with the fucking meat of your hand. And that broad palm creates more of a concussion impact. When you hit somebody upside the head with an open palm versus a fist, the concussion's greater.
I'm a big fan of holding the head and slapping the shit out of the ear, yeah. Dude. And then they get up and they're like, whoa, what the fuck? Yeah. And they don't even realize it.
Completely
and
off.
You get that free shot in most of the time.
Yeah. Hell yeah, dude. Like, I think there should be punches to the body and slaps to the head.
That'd be great jujitsu to watch. It'd be great tournaments. I would do that.
Punch to the body, and I think you should be able to have the heel to the kidneys.
Mm-hmm. You can do that again now. That's legal again.
With where?
In MMA. I mean.
Oh, MMA. You can heel kick again.
You can heel kick.
That's awesome. But I want to see that in jujitsu matches.
Yeah, that'd be cool too. Yeah. You know what I love, dude? Like when you got rear mount, dude, and you're fucking kidney kicking him in the belly. Really sets up that choke fucking beautiful, man.
Oh, yeah, nice. Yeah. Especially if you accidentally kick him in the dick.
Yeah, I try and do that accidentally all the time. Just ask any of my practice partners.
You accidentally try or...
Yeah, accidentally try.
Tried to accidentally do
it. Yeah, some shit like that. I know you're getting... it's 11:45. It's getting late here, but I got one more question before we got here.
You can ask any questions you want, dude.
Dude, you were a Mormon, man. Can you talk about that a little bit? I can't imagine you being a Mormon, dude. You got tattoos all over you and all kinds of other stuff. But you're a really good dude, man, and I just want to hear your thoughts on that.
Oh, I just... You know, I got brainwashed when I was 19. Right after the Lions, then I came home. A couple of my buddies were just joining the church that I, you know, grew up with, and they were just telling me about it, and telling me I needed it, and I needed a change, and shit like that. And I was like, okay, whatever. And one day I actually listened to it and everything, and it was just like, it makes sense. It makes more sense than everything else around here, you know. Made more sense than. Like born again type Christianity or whatever the hell was out there. It just made more sense. There's a lot of explanations for things. And I was just, you know, I was 19. Shit.
You said they tried to...
Who's smart at 19?
You know? Right. You know, like, it was a different time though too. Like, cause people don't understand when we're 19, there's no internet to check all this stuff out with. And
it's
a different time in the world, too.
You just, you know, when people are convincing salesman type thing and you just believe them and you've got no reason not to because you can't get any other kind of really true sources of information to find out, you just go along with it. So I was believing what they... Fuck me, I believe what they told me.
But some good came out of it, right? You met your wife that way?
Oh, yeah, lots of good. You know, I got a wife and four kids, and, well, shit, I lived like 20 years without any coffee, tea, tobacco, or alcohol, or anything.
Are you trying to make up for it now?
No. Actually, like, if I drink, I only have like a 3-beer buzz, you know.
Beer buzz, we just talked about that, too. Yeah. That's funny.
And I, you know... Need some reefer to help with pain, you know, pain management and anxiety.
Do you think that should be legal everywhere?
Fuck yeah, dude. I got off of fucking 8 different medications. I was on 8 meds every single day, dude. And using marijuana completely got me off it all. It saved my life, for real. I even was able to go back to college because of it.
That's awesome, man. I hear that story over and over again.
You know, I was always on the dean's list, dude. You know, oh yeah, weed makes you stupid, motherfucker. You know, I was on the dean's list almost every semester.
I'm going to say your short-term memory is not that good.
My short-term? How's that?
You left your keys in the car. No, I didn't. It wasn't in there?
No.
Oh, that's amazing.
No, that's so good. It was locked.
Oh, it was locked?
I didn't know if I locked the truck.
Oh, okay.
So... No, that right there, because what that was... No. There's a direct relation to that. What that was... I was going to drive out last second. I figured out, you know, if I tried to leave with this truck and trailer out of the hotel, other people are going to be parked in my spot by the time I leave. So, Mike said he was like 2 minutes away. He can come pick me up. I'm like, fuck, being rushed. I'm trying to get all my shit together. So I'm not being rude and making him wait forever for me and this and that. And I was like, ah, great. And when I get flustered like that, you know, it's like, you know, and I just got done with a 4-hour drive. I'm just fucking tired and I'm done and I'm about to go do a 2-hour seminar. It's like, I don't have all my shit together and driving. I'm like, fuck, did I? Because I knew I did it when I did it, but later on, I'm like, there's been times where I forgot and I thought I did, you know, this, that.
Did I press lock or unlock? I didn't check it. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, but no, you're right. My short-term memory is much worse than...
I was just going to say, anyways, I never smoke weed, and my short-term memory is just as bad as yours, if not worse. So.
But no, it's like actually like I've actually started to develop like almost a photographic memory because of weed.
That's cool.
It's connected things in my brain that weren't there for a while or whatever. I mean, it helps with depression. It helps with the chronic pain.
Have you ever rolled high on marijuana?
I'm pretty much always
high. All the time? Do you think it helps you?
It doesn't hurt me.
Right.
Dude, I was getting high kickboxing. And I remember the first time, too.
Yeah.
I ever got high. The first thing I did was went straight to the dojo.
Damn.
And I sparred for hours and I was like, this is the most amazing thing in the world. Like everything worked because I'm super, my brain seizes a little bit, like, mm-hmm. you know, with flow. But when I'm high, it just flows. It just allows me to go, man. And I'm just like,
damn,
things just does what it's supposed to do. Like I was made to do, it just fucking goes.
Half the people I talk to say it's the most amazing thing ever to roll with, and half of them say it makes them worse. Not rolling, but especially like MMA, like stand-up stuff.
Well, MMA, I like jiu-jitsu, yeah. MMA, I wouldn't.
Yeah.
Like, I liked it better. Like, I remember times when I was training Stone in MMA. It was just, I was just a little bit too disoriented because of the wearing the headgear, sparring and stuff right. like that. If I didn't have to wear, I remember I felt okay if I wasn't wearing headgear. But when I was wearing headgear, it was just almost like too discombobulating. Mm-hmm. Like it would turn over your head, you can't quite see, and you need to have your peripherals are increased a little bit when you're high. So
right.
it helps that have your to use those
peripherals. To have it.
Yeah, it makes you more cat-like. So, but when you have something hindering it, it makes it really bad. It's just
right. That's amazing.
But yeah, I would say BJJ. Yeah, no with the MMA. Right. But some people, you know, teach their own. I mean, that's just me. I have no fucking clue.
Somebody some people are better. Be the they yet. Say they're better. And then some people are like, dude, like I knocked a guy out really bad when he was high one time. Like the first time I got high in kickbox. And like, he was just so slow. He was like trying to do like some jumping shit. And I cracked him. And then he woke up. And I'm like, he's like, I'm never smoking weed before I train again.
That's good.
But yeah. Like some people makes them like way better. And I was just wondering if there's.
Yeah, I was faster and more accurate.
Damn. I believe that too. Because I've seen that in jiu-jitsu sometimes too.
Yeah.
It's just an interesting phenomenon.
Yeah, it's teach their own, man. That's why I believe, like, I was just thinking about this on the drive of the many things I was thinking of, you know, just like, you know, how could we just reset all these fucking laws? Okay, first and foremost, if it's just something that's done unto yourself, by yourself, you know, then you just do with yourself, not illegal. You know?
Right. First you just need a better lobbyist, that's all. That's all
it is. As long as it doesn't hurt another human being or the environment or animals in the environment, it's yours, you know, do right. it, you know, there's no law against it. Now, when things start affecting animals and other humans and shit like that, that's where you have to draw the line. But like, I don't think people should go to jail for drugs.
It's crazy that cigarettes are legal and you don't get right. in trouble for having a cigarette, but you get in trouble for a joint. Like right. that doesn't make sense to me at all.
No.
Or alcohol is like, that just doesn't make sense. It's just all lobbies and politics and bullshit.
It's been in place for so long. You know, it's not going to change. It's here to stay until a catastrophe comes.
No, weed's getting legal everywhere. It's changing a little bit at a time.
I hope Canada just had it done.
Huh? Yeah,
As a whole country. Uh-huh. Come on, America. But you got idiots like Jeff Sessions in there. Yeah. You know what? I'm going to say it. The baby boomers have to fucking die. We need a mass. We need to have a mass. What's the word I'm looking for? Extinction of the baby boomers. Fuck them all.
Oh,
I'm serious. I mean, that sounds terrible, but you know what? If I'm any kind of racist of any sort, it's towards baby boomers. That's it. That's the only dude. Like I can't fucking stand them. That's like these white fucking cracker motherfuckers. You know, crazy, some kind of conservatard Christianity thing that I don't recognize as anything. You know, it's like,
don't hold it in.
What is this shit? So, yeah, that's how I feel about that.
Yeah, so you ended up getting married, and then you guys left the church together?
Yeah, yeah, it was a mutual decision. It was just, like, it wasn't good for the family, you know, and I'm a, like I said before, I'm an autodidact. I'd like to know anything and everything, and I was, like, you know, in minor leadership of the church. I mean, I was always a teacher because I knew the doctrine. I knew the church inside and out. I knew the church inside and out as far as what information they told me that they allowed me to see, you know?
Right.
And when I was able to see it all for myself, the truth and the contradiction, you know, it's like, and it wasn't just saying, well, Johnny said that the Molly is this, you know, it's like, no, it wasn't that. It was just simply self-evident of just the truth, the documentation of what was going on, even what was damning the church's own writings and right. things like that. That was all I needed. I didn't need any enemies of the church telling me that the church was bad or whatever. All I had to do was just see the past of the church of itself and be like, wow, no, I'm done.
And that's just because the internet came along, right? And you were able to research stuff on the internet?
Yeah.
Damn.
You know, part of me holds myself accountable as a naive motherfucker who didn't do due diligence, but at the same time, it's like, Sean, you were 19, you know.
But a lot of good came out of it, man. Dude. Yeah, you got a family.
I don't have, look, I don't have any regrets as far as, like, you know, oh, I missed my life. Well, no, I fucking lived my life hardcore, no matter what. Dude, as a Mormon, man, like everybody, like you said, I could never would imagine.
I would never imagine.
Fucking no Mormon ever fucking imagined me as a Mormon either. You know, I was devout, man. I even didn't even cuss and shit. You know, I mean, devout, dude. 10% of my gross income for 22 fucking years. You know, didn't drink coffee, tea, tobacco, alcohol, smoke weed, do anything. All this shit that's good for me? No.
Just think, if you did all that, you'd probably be...
Yeah, I could be...
in shape right now. Or a bigger mess. Who knows?
Yeah, who knows?
But, you could have went to...
But, you know, no, my body fell apart even when I didn't do all those things. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, in all those things, if you're a Mormon, you follow the word of wisdom, you're going to be a strong, healthy... Mormon boy, and you're gonna have unlimited strength. It's like your Samson's hair is your word of wisdom. You know, shut the fuck up, man. Dude, that was just, you know, people get sick and die on the word of wisdom, even if they don't. So there's just so many controls. I mean, it's just so bizarre. And then I leave it, and I'm actually able to look at it without emotion and stuff like that, and be like, how the fuck did I ever fall for this? No matter what, how did I fall for this? I mean, this is just like this, like. It's just like another version of Scientology, you know. And then, you know, being an amateur, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? Not theologian, whatever. Somebody studies fucking religion. I've studied all, you know, as many religions as I've come across. I've studied it because it's interesting to me. And as I started seeing, I was like, man, our shit ain't nothing new. This is reused and repurposed stories from another time. I mean, shit, dude. I went as far as into like Sumerian shit,
dude. Yeah. I've been watching the stuff I watch on Joe Rogan, the Jordan Peterson stuff, and he breaks down the Bible, dude, and like does just some crazy shit with the Bible. You might be interested in it. I'll forward it to you.
That'd be cool. But you know, I look at this is like the Bible is just an allegory. You know, it's just a complete and total metaphor.
Dude, he talks all about that. You'll love it. I'm going to send it to you.
Yeah, I'll check it out. I think I was just telling my wife about it. I just gave her the rundown off the top of my head. And if it turns out it's what I said, it's one of those moments.
It could be one of those moments.
But those little moments where I was just like getting this fucking information that was already there. And what that is, when I see something, I call that a witness. You know, like a second witness saying, yes, you're on the right track, Sean. Keep going in that direction. It wasn't about, oh, I should have said it. No, but really, would I have fucking said it if I thought to say it? You know, I'm too fucking lazy to start a YouTube channel. You know, I'm too fucking lazy to just do this. You know, I'd be, you know.
This is easy, dude. We're just sitting here talking, man. This is like the best part of my day most of the time.
Yeah, but with depression, I just fucking, like, everything looks like a goddamn mountain.
Yeah.
You know, and how bad I hurt just to move from point A to point B. Just for me to move from here to the car when we leave.
Mm-hmm.
It's gonna be hell.
I can carry you, man. You're a pretty light guy.
That'll hurt worse.
Oh, all right.
That'll hurt me worse.
I'll rub your two kisses.
Is that my butt?
I don't know.
I think Otukus is a butt.
I don't know what it is. My grandma used to say that a lot, and I was like, oh, no, grandma, no. So I never found out what it means.
Or is that Greek or is it Jewish?
I don't know.
Tukus.
Sounds Polish.
Sounds either.
I don't know.
Are you Polish or something?
I'm Polish and German.
Polish and
German. But my grandma was German, so I don't know.
Mike Polnick, you'd like him. Hey, Mike. Have you met Mike Polnick?
No, talked I haven't.
Yeah,
no.
Look for him on Facebook. He's pretty cool. He's a bioethics.
Damn.
Is that what he does?
Sounds like a smart person.
Yeah, lots of philosophy, lots of
yeah, ethics. He's going to listen to this and never going to talk to either one of us.
Yeah, he can philosophize about not making money. It's a joke. It's just the amount of debt you have to accrue for such a degree, and it's so hard to make a lot of money.
The gym manager that was today that took our picture, and I were like, shh, she's a doctor in English. English literature.
Karen?
Kate. Dude, she's a nice lady. Yeah, she's a super nice lady.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
See, I like smart people.
Uh-huh. You like her too.
No, she was cool. I liked her personality. And what, her husband's a photographer?
I don't know what he does. He's pretty smart, so he's more than a photographer. But he's an amateur photographer. He does all the photography for our fights and stuff.
Okay, yeah, because we're gonna let him in the grappling industry. Yeah. Let him take pictures.
Yeah, dude, he does a great job. He does, like, all our fights. He's a photographer for our team, but he actually has a real job, too. He's doctor or something, too. I don't know. My wife actually would probably know. They're pretty good friends. They talk a lot.
That was a good atmosphere at the gym.
Yeah.
Because it seemed like everybody was...
It was cool because we had guys from, like, a bunch of different gyms, too, man. We all got along. It was super nice.
Good. Yeah it was, like, I thought everybody was from the same... Honest to God, I thought everybody was from the same gym until I got a clue. And the one guy was like, hey, are you one of the coaches there? I'm like, nah, man, I'm from Ohio, dude.
Yeah.
Are you not from here? This isn't your gym?
Yeah, it's pretty sweet. This is two seminars I went with you, man. I'd recommend anyone check out your seminars. You give privates and stuff, too?
Oh, yeah. Yep, totally.
So if someone wants a private, how do they get in touch with you?
Just contact me on Facebook Messenger or Instagram Messenger. Just fucking contact me. I even got my phone number on the Facebook.
Dude, we had a sweet conversation about Facebook being pen pals. You want to just say that real quick before we get out of here? That was pretty sweet.
Yeah, no, Facebook is just simply a real-time, instantaneous pen pal relationship where you don't have to wait for the letter to come back. You can talk to each other right there. It's no different than having a pen pal. You know, there's ways that there's great friendships. You know, you read a story about it. So, like, if two pen pals are writing each other for a few months or years or whatever, usually you would hear a story about them meeting each other eventually and how cool it would be or whatever. Well, I was on a podcast back in 2016 where I said I have a goal to meet my Facebook friends, you know. And when you say, oh yeah, that sounds kind of cool, but when you actually go meet these Facebook friends, I was just at Jason Eric Bell's place, and his girlfriend at the time was like, are you sure this is a good idea? You barely know him. And I've been talking to this dude for like 2 years already on Facebook. It's like, dude, I know you, motherfucker. And, you know, and it's just like...
This is kind of how this all happened. We were just talking on Facebook. I mean, the podcast, the seminar, everything.
Yeah. So it's just like, okay, well, unless he's drastically different than what he's acting like on here, I can handle this dude.
Right.
You know, I can be around him. So it's like, but for everybody else, it's like awkward, you know? And like after I meet somebody in person, then I friend request them or whatever, or do an Instagram or whatever, you know? And it's just like, it's just simply to say, hey, let's continue. Like I'm into collecting as many friends as I possibly can. And I'm talking about, no, I'm not talking like, you know, the deepest friendships or whatever, but like people that, you know, that's just a little more than an acquaintance, you know? It's like, look, you know, let's get to know each other. And it's just through normal interaction. And you can interact with a lot of people at once on Facebook. It's just not a pen pal, dude. Like every single friends you've got on there it's like 1,000 pen pals.
Right. And they're all for fighting for me pretty much.
Really? Yeah, I got mine spans because, you know, I didn't fight for so long or anything. I had to like reach out
and fighting.
I had to put my tentacles out in different ways. You know, I'm an inventor.
What'd you invent?
I'm a sculptor, you know.
God damn.
I can't tell you.
Renaissance, man.
I'll tell you off of this.
All right.
You know, so, you know, I had multiple different black belts in different martial arts. I mean, just I'm doing something different. There's always a different avenue. You know, I have a business management degree with a minor in ethics and philosophy.
That's where the LSD came in from.
I've had many, many jobs, dude. I can't just do one thing, and I can't ever believe that there's just one way.
Right.
There just isn't.
Dude, I
don't see it. It's not my reality.
My favorite part of, grappling and fighting sports is that you got a friend wherever you go. Like, in wrestling, I always had somewhere to stay. And
yeah.
Now in jiu-jitsu, too, the same thing, man.
It's like a fraternity.
It is. Because not too many people can do this shit, at least at the level that
BJJ
you're doing
is
that.
Like Mormons.
Sort of. No, it is all cult, dude. The martial arts are a serious cult.
Oh, it's a total fucking cult.
Yeah.
People don't realize that. You know, like, I was having a conversation.
Cults can be good, too, though, man. It's not always bad.
Yeah, I mean, if you take out the stigma of the word cult, like, cult just means more than one people believe something.
Okay, so do you think jiu-jitsu is more of a cult, or do you think it's more of a gang?
Oh, I'm scratching my nuts. They're not hot or anything, they're just uncomfortable.
Thank God your balls aren't hot, because I don't want to see your shorts up on here on the desk.
No, they were hot earlier. Okay, what was the question?
I was like, do you think jiu-jitsu is more of a cult, or do you think it's more of a gang?
Cult or gang? What's the difference?
Well, a gang is kind of more like the people that you're with, and a cult is kind of like everyone in jiu-jitsu would all be in the same cult.
Is there a ritual in that gang? Like, gangs have ritual.
Yeah, gangs have some rituals, too.
You see what I mean? I mean, like, I think it's all a cult. It's all a cult, both of it.
A cult usually has, like, a leader.
Is it a violent cult or a nice cult?
Most cults have, like, one defined leader, though, and that's really not what gangs have. You know, like, what cult do you have that...
I mean, unless you have, like, a unifier. I mean, not a unifier, but, like, somebody, like, a regional president, you know, the Crips and the regional thing of the Bloods over here, and they just talk. You know, it's like, let's let them deal with it. We'll sip our tea on the front porch. I don't know.
And cults always sign up. There's always a lot of sex with cults, so...
It's a cult.
Yeah, it's probably a cult.
Everybody's trying to hook up. It's so funny. This is another level of fucking, what would you call it? Like, grind. You got Tinder, Grindr. What could be a BJJ one?
I don't know. BJJ just sounds like enough already.
Yeah, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Like blowjob.
I know.
Big,
jammy. Big juicy joints. I don't know.
That'll work.
Oh, man. We're getting off the rails. Let's get out of here.
Yeah, let's go.
All right. This is K-Man's Corner. We're getting out of here. If you like Sean Doherty, check him out. Sean Doherty on Facebook. Sean Doherty on Instagram, too?
Yeah, it's Sean Doc Doherty on Instagram.
Sean Doc Doherty on Instagram. I'll post the links in here when I post this one live. And if you like this podcast, make sure you click on the subscribe wherever you're listening.
If you like this particular podcast, there's something wrong with you. This was crazy shit.
Oh, dude, this is better than normal. Ray's not here. We didn't talk about tentacle porn or any of the other crazy stuff we always talk about.
Tentacle porn?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I was always wondering, like, if I'd be contacted to have to do a scene with her when my, what's her name? Oh, shit, what's her name? Something Morgan?
I don't know.
Dazia Morgan.
Is that the tentacle porn girl?
The octobooty.
Oh.
Because I got the full body octopus working right now. I was like, when this is done, I was like, at least a photo shoot should be funny.
Yeah, dude,
not like
a cool.
sexual
yeah.
one.
Yeah.
I mean, I.
Did you ever write her?
No. Did I? No, you know what I did? I wrote. I sent her a message and I just said, my octopus is bigger than yours.
You should do it more professionally than that next time. You probably get that.
No, I don't care.
Dude, that probably gets you a lot of hits on social media if you're trying to get some more privates.
But because of her octobooty?
Yeah, but like, there's just going to get more
fans.
That's
a cross-marketing.
Cross-marketing, but the more people you have on your Instagram, the more people see your shit, you know, and repost it.
Well, I think of like when the head of the octopus starts getting done and stuff like that, it'll be better, but right now the head's just an outline. As you can see, all the tentacles are starting to take their shape. But yeah, as far as me and my tattoo artist Rich Cook know from Greystone Tattoo Company, As far as we know, it's the first full body suit octopus thing going on, so I might be the first one doing it.
Well, we'll see if we get any hits on here. See if anyone else has a full body octopus.
Yeah, let me know. Let me know.
Let Sean know that he's not the first, so he can change it up, so he can look even cooler.
But yeah,
man, how much does that cost? That's all over your shit. That's gonna be expensive.
Me and Richard Cook, we were stationed together in Dover, Delaware. We have just history together, good friends. He's into jiu-jitsu and I teach jiu-jitsu. I'm into tattoos and he gives tattoos.
This works out good, man.
Fucking perfect, dude.
I got a hookup like that for my PT. It works out good.
Yeah, it's good friendships, man. You know, see, those are true friendships where you want to be around the person and you both benefit each other simultaneously. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for
where
sure.
It's a two-way street.
It's like a barter.
Giving, yeah. Like some friends that are out there are just leeches, you know, mm-hmm. and shit, ticks and leeches. But there's those friends who are also wellsprings. You know, they give back, and that's what Rich Cook is. You know, there's lots of cool friends out there that are like that.
I like that a lot, too.
I'm learning how to pick my friends good.
That's good. And you want to give it, you're still at Strong Style for your main gym?
Yeah, I'm getting back there. I'm moving back from being full-time driver for Grappling Industries, and I'll be driving for the company like once or twice a month for doing the OSO, the only submission only
mm-hmm.
two-day tournaments. So I'm gonna be cutting back hours for that. So I'll be doing private seminars, and I'll be coaching out of Strong Style. We're gonna be doing a morning program, I believe, with me and Ben Halford. We're gonna be working with the MMA fighters.
Awesome. So Solomon Renfro, next time you're down there working at Strong Style, check out Sean. And you got anything else, man?
No, that's all I have to say about that.
All right, thank you very much. Another K-Man's Corner. It's been a pleasure to meet you. I'm glad I got to actually sit down and talk with you, man. It's been an honor.
It's awesome to be here.
For real.
Getting to know you too, man.
Yep, thanks very much, man. That's it. K-Man's Corner, we're out of here.
Sorry, I'm getting punchy.
That's all right, dude. I'm punchy all the time. That's how it works. Ready to get you home?
Yeah, sure, man.
All right.